gentlemen, welcome to another weekly edition of Popcorn Optional, a movie podcast where we talk all things movies. And this week we're going to be reviewing DC's new film Justice League from directors Zack Snyder and Joss Whedon. I don't really know how to phrase that. But we'll be doing a review of Justice League for better or for worse. And guys, it was a slow news week, so we're going to talk a couple trailers and then do our content of the week and then we're out. But my name is Cameron Salina, and tonight I am joined by my co-hosts, Jake Brown and Trevor Allison.
What's up?
Hello.
And, you know, I really wanted to do a segment on the best Thanksgiving movies, but let me ask you guys this. Can you guys think of a Thanksgiving movie off the top of your head?
Charlie Brown Thanksgiving, where they all eat popcorn around a ping pong table.
Okay.
No, there's one where it's like a serial killer murdering turkey. And the tagline is like "Gobble gobble, mother effer." So,
no, you're kidding.
Name of it, but it's supposed to be amazing in the worst way possible.
Turkey killer movie?
I'm trying to Google it really quick.
What's that animated movie about?
Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I don't even want to know any more about that.
The first Thanksgiving, Trevor? Is that what that's called?
The animated one about the turkey that's trying to avoid being killed or something.
Yeah.
Isn't that a thing?
Chicken Run? Chicken Run? Do you guys remember that?
Hey, that's
a
good one.
It's like Chicken
Run. That
was
a great movie.
But with turkeys and pilgrims.
Turkey Run. Turkey 5K. Thanksgiving 5K.
Turkey 5K. Free Birds.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, that's it. I forgot. Yeah. I should have also said the one that has the same title as a Lynyrd Skynyrd song. Then we would have remembered.
Have either of you guys ever yelled Freebird at a concert before?
Yeah.
Only every concert.
I yelled it in the front row at the Mute Math concert. And then he laughed and looked at me and said, "Never again." And I died a little on the inside.
One of us should have yelled it at the Civil Wars show at Common Ground.
Yes.
I think they were too infatuated with each other to hear us. So
that's a whole other podcast.
Too
right
soon?
There.
A whole podcast digging into why the Civil Wars broke up. It'll be like, where's Richard Simmons, but about the Civil Wars.
That could be like a good true crime style podcast. I think that would break through all the true crime noise that's out there right now.
I think there's 10
What if it's like American Vandal? American Vandal, but like the Civil Wars.
Yes, exactly.
There we go.
Money call Ira Glass. We need him to produce this.
But yeah, there's not really any great, like the only one that I could really think of was like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is somewhat of a Thanksgiving movie.
Okay.
Outside of that, it was kind of disappointing. Like the movies that were on the list, most of them were like Christmas movies that it's like, watch this at Thanksgiving to get excited about Christmas.
No.
That's not so. Please, somebody out there, make a Thanksgiving movie. And, you know, if we're lucky, I think it'll be Zack Snyder with the Pilgrims vs. Indians movie.
Oh, dear God.
I want slow motion arrows hitting the very ends of hairs of pilgrims. Can Zack Snyder make that happen for me?
You're speaking my love language right now.
He is like, he just has wet dreams in slow motion. Like... His whole life.
Is that appropriate for the podcast?
I don't know. I can cut it out if I need to. Just his whole thing is just slow-mo everything. Slow-mo is cool. Slow-mo white pride against Asian and Muslim people in the intro of Justice League. Yeah.
Nobody does
totally
a Superman mourn as Zack Snyder does one. I mean,
golly, I was like, oh yeah, people are sad about, wait a minute, white supremacy. What is, I don't know. And now we're talking about Justice League, so here we go.
Wait, whoa.
Let's just go ahead and get into it, because I think we're all pretty emotional about this film. But like I said, we have a couple trailers that we want to talk about, because there's a lot of trailers that came out this week, and there are no topics when it comes to movie news that I really feel like talking about. There are four trailers of interest this week: Rampage, The Incredibles 2, A Quiet Place, and A Wrinkle in Time. So let's start with Rampage, the new film from Brad Peyton, director of San Andreas, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson, based on the 1990s game where monsters destroy cities. Do I need to say more?
I actually, me and a few friends were at one of those like brewery arcade things last night, like retro games and stuff, which was a ton of fun.
It's called Barcade.
Well, this was a Cidercade, Trevor. So I'm sorry, but you were wrong.
Cicade?
My
cicada?
Bad.
A cicada. We were at a cicada.
I have not reached that level of society yet.
There you go. Yeah, Waco has some catching up to do. So we were at the cicada last night, and we were playing Rampage. And you know, I was like, that was fun for 45 seconds. I don't understand how an entire movie is being made on this. At the Justice League screening that I literally got home from like an hour ago, beforehand, the Jumanji trailer played, and like, it got some laughs. You know, it looks like it's going to be a kind of funny movie. People were excited about it. There was a buzz in the theater, if you will. And then immediately we roll into another Dwayne The Rock Johnson film, Rampage trailer. And the moment that trailer ended, dead silence. And you just you just hear someone go, ugh. And then immediately Tomb Raider trailer played. And I was like, what year is it? Oh my God, what is happening? Studios are just out of ideas. This looks horrible. Poor George. Poor the gorilla that was in this movie.
Yeah, so I vaguely remember the video game. It's the same kind of thing, Jake. It's fun for like 20 minutes. And then you're like, wait a second. All this game is just smashing things. Why does this exist? I don't understand. It might end up being like weirdly entertaining in like a destruction disaster movie carried by Dwayne The Rock Johnson sense. I don't understand. Although it played a lot better in my theater than yours, apparently, because there was a little bit of buzz. The guys next to me were pretty pleased about it.
I'm just like, it's the year 2017. That's like the first point. It's 2017. Why are we making a Rampage movie? But also, it's like, we've had incredible CGI destruction films for like, what, 15 years now?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Just anytime the premise of a film is, it's like, well, it's going to be cool looking, I'm like, we've had that for a long time.
Also,
nobody cares anymore.
There's no way that the first third of this film is not a shot-for-shot remake of Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
Right? I mean, it's like the exact same thing. I mean, yeah. I know it goes a different direction.
Did Geostorm like make any money? Like, that's basically what this is, but with animals instead of weather.
I don't think it did great.
I think this
it
is
does
actually,
have The Rock, though.
This is
actually,
less interesting
it didn't do
than
bad.
Geostorm to me.
But it's The Rock.
So just take a guess as to how much Geostorm has made.
Profit or like gross?
Just gross. Gross revenue. The box office.
I bet it's made a little bit over 100.
Yeah. I was going to say like 90 million.
$202 million worldwide.
Oh my gosh.
Oh.
Okay, if we ever make any money from this podcast, we're spending it on PSAs about these movies. Like, don't go see this. Don't go see this. It's not worth it.
Let's start a YouTube channel called Don't Go See This, Go See This Instead, where it's just talking, hey, don't go see this.
Call your local theater and demand that they show Lady Bird instead of Geostorm. Do the right thing.
Yes, you tell.
I don't even know if Lady Bird is playing anywhere near me yet.
It's not playing in Waco.
I love, Cameron, that we're on a podcast and you go, we should start a YouTube channel and call it. I'm like, dude, we have a movie podcast.
No,
we can just do that here. Like, we have.
Look, I don't know if you guys have heard, but YouTube's ad revenue is killing right now. So we need to hop on that. We need to be
I heard it was the opposite. I heard they were like revoking stuff.
Oh, no, I was being 100% sarcastic. It's
okay.
Destroying people's careers.
Yes. Okay.
Well,
okay.
In fairness to them, it shouldn't really be a medium for a career.
Hey. People thought the internet was crazy in 1990.
Okay, I'll say this.
And then Al Gore was like, look what I invented.
If your form of distribution is the main part of your career, then you should rework what you're doing.
Strongly agree, Trevor. Well said. Okay, well, this has been Working Creative.
Look out.
Hey, there we go. Full circle.
That was an inside joke for less than three of our listeners.
Yep.
I'd be willing to bet maybe one person that listen. Maybe I'll give you three, actually. I bet all three of our wives.
Our wives. Yeah. I was gonna say our wives.
All right, let's talk about A Wrinkle in Time or something else.
Okay, Incredibles 2. All right. Do you guys feel like this movie needs to get made?
I thought it needed to be made like 10 years ago.
And now you're like, no.
I mean, I love The Incredibles. Like, it's one of my favorite Pixar movies. And like, fortunately, with an animated film, it can be 15 years later and it doesn't look like it's 15 years later because the characters don't actually age. Because, spoiler, they're not real. They're in the computer. So
wait, what?
Yeah, I know, right?
What?
So, yeah, I mean, I'm excited for it. Like, I love that world and those characters. But yeah, I mean, I don't think there's like the market demand for this that there was for like Finding Dory, because I think The Incredibles is like one of the more underrated, underappreciated Pixar films.
Yeah, I think the original Incredibles is one of the better superhero films ever made. And yeah, it's by far the best Fantastic Four film we've ever had made. But I don't know if there's a demand for it. When I look back on the best films that Pixar has put out recently, it's all been original films, like Inside Out, things like that. And while Finding Dory and Monsters University are fine, they're okay. It's like they're original. Like, I would rather have them go one for two. Like, every other year they put out an insanely great original film, and then the next year it's like, that was okay. I'd rather have them go one for two, switching off years, creating original stuff, than kind of just lobbing this box office fodder at us that, you know, it's kind of like, okay, we get it. You're going to make $1 billion on this.
Yeah, I mostly agree. I'd also be more interested actually in incredible prequels than a sequels to kind of see the world beforehand that's alluded to a lot in the first one.
You mean like the 70s-esque film, like 70s time that they were in, kind of?
Yeah, like with like the before superheroes were outlawed or whatever, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. I think overall it's just kind of why is this where their creative forces are going when they have been known to put out some of the best original films year after year?
Right. I do agree with that. I would like them to focus a little bit more on original content. And I mean, I don't know. Maybe they need, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe they just like making money because they are good at that.
Maybe this company that's based off of making money just likes making money. I should say, of the next 3 years, or 2 years, they have two sequels coming. So they have The Incredibles 2 coming next year and Toy Story 4 coming in June of 2019. I should also say that next week is their new film Coco coming out. So there is something original there, but last time they put out an original film was in 2015. So, you know, it is what it is. You lit a pie and I die. The next trailer that I saw was a trailer that I didn't check out when it went online. I don't know why. It just wasn't it didn't draw me in. But when I watched, maybe it's because it's a horror film, but when I sat down in the theater today, I watched it then and was shocked that John Krasinski is directing a new film starring his wife, Emily Blunt, and it's a horror film called A Quiet Place. What did you guys think of this trailer?
When I watched this, I was like, oh, this is what It Comes at Night should have been.
Yeah, that's exactly what it felt like.
Yeah, this is going to be freaking terrifying. What the silence does to your brain is incredible. These 2.5 minutes, I could hardly even handle it. I don't think I can see this movie.
Well, you're going to have to, because we have a movie podcast. And
But yeah.
This is going to be one of those weeks where we get a text from Trevor and it's like, hey guys, can't see it this week.
Too busy. Way too busy.
It's going to be like, wait, Trevor, didn't you say that 6 months ago before when the trailer came out?
I mean, yeah, we've said it a lot. I think two of the better genres with originality right now are sci-fi and horror. And this is a really, really interesting premise. that I hope is explained just as much as It Comes at Night, or even less, as to how we got here, but just lets us be terrified with the characters.
I should break the news to you guys. I don't know if this is, you know, a good thing or a bad thing, but it is being produced by Michael Bay.
Maybe it's just on an investor, like getting some investors kind of basis.
I mean, Michael Bay did direct John Krasinski in 13 Hours of the Benghazi film, so you have to wonder how close are they. After that
kind of feels like a do one for me, I'll do one for you kind of thing.
Yeah,
because John Krasinski is really like wanting to direct ever since The Office.
He's directed 2 films. He directed a really small film back in 2009 called Brief Interviews with a Hideous Man, or with Hideous Men, that I didn't hear much about. And then he directed a film last year that premiered at Sundance called The Hollers. And that got actually really good reviews at Sundance. But I think, yeah, the Rotten Tomatoes score of it was not great. I think once it came out to the public, it wasn't as well received. But man, I don't know if there's anybody that's like kind of behind the scenes right now that it's like, I'm rooting for more. Like, this is that guy that it's like, you know, John Krasinski's probably a great guy. I would love to see him just have a great career.
He's made all of the right decisions. Like, everything on his resume, like in the moment of pre-production of that film, you'd be like, this is going to be a winner. Like, of course he made the right call on this, but then it just doesn't work out, or it, I don't know. Like, I want him to do really well, but he is just, he hasn't since The Office.
I have two related fun facts. One, Michael Bay is also a producer on the new Amazon Jack Ryan series, in which John Krasinski plays Ryan, which I'm otherwise excited about, because I have the same love for John Krasinski that you guys do. Also, I was looking through Michael Bay's list of things he's produced to hopefully get some encouragement from that, and there's nothing encouraging there. So I am now a little
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, we'll see. But I think this is independent of Michael Bay's involvement. It looks like it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah, it looks horrifying. So. Here's hoping that A Quiet Place turns out to be a hit for John Krasinski. That's coming out April 6th of 2018. The last trailer that we're going to talk about is a trailer that dropped just tonight as we were prepping for this podcast, which is the new trailer for A Wrinkle in Time, which I know as the first trailer came out, we were all super high on it. Did this trailer make that hope go higher, or did that kind of soften things a little bit?
Haven't seen it.
Okay.
It's not as good as the first trailer, but I'm still really excited about it. I think this is going to be like a top-notch children's movie.
Yeah, I think this trailer made me cool on it a little bit. I can't say that it grabbed me as much as the first trailer, but I mean, that being said, this is a film directed by Ava DuVernay, who's one of the most talented directors working today. It also has so many amazing actresses and actors in it. And
Oprah.
Who is
Mindy Kaling.
Doesn't act often, but is great when she does.
She is actually really good.
Yeah. Which makes her even better, the fact that she doesn't act as often. It's like the Daniel Day-Lewis.
When you have more money than God, I mean, you can be a little selective.
What is Oprah's net worth? I'm curious. There it is on her Wikipedia page. $3 billion.
Literally does exactly things that she wants and only things that she wants.
Gosh, can you imagine?
I really wish I wasn't here right now. I'm just here for the money. Like,
wait.
Yeah, the money we make off this podcast is insane. You guys should start a podcast just to make as much money as we do.
Maybe an Oprah-themed podcast.
Yeah.
Gosh, can you
imagine
if there was somebody whose podcast was, I'm just going to review every episode of the original Oprah Winfrey Show?
Dude, that
starting
would
back
probably
in the beginning.
Kill. That would probably kill. That's actually a really good idea. Dude, there's like random niche podcasts for everything.
I don't, like some of them, like I can't imagine somebody being like, guys, today on Oprah's Christmas giveaway, she gave away a car. And it was insane.
December 13th, like, what is there 1998.
Yeah.
I mean, I would do a podcast where it's like, you get drunk and you talk about the Oprah Winfrey Show episode by episode. That could be really funny.
Yeah. Also, is it what, like, is it streaming somewhere? Like, how did, can you watch it?
I have no idea. You could probably buy it.
There's a
non-zero
chance that old episodes have been taped over, like the masters have been taped over.
Oh, you think so?
I mean,
man, that'd be sad.
I don't. Before she was like super huge, it could be. I mean, if Doctor Who got taped over, just about anything could be.
What got taped over?
Original Doctor Who. They only have like a third of the episodes or something like that.
Oh no!
No, why?
People didn't.
This is coming from somebody who doesn't watch.
Oh yeah, people didn't see TV as like an actual artistic medium until like 25 years ago.
Yeah, just like people who don't say that about YouTube now, Trevor.
Oh, look out.
Good callback.
Like a comedian that always ties it back in.
There you
I'm
go.
I'm the Tom Haverford.
This podcast is a flat circle.
Also, do you guys want to talk flat earth theory while we're here? Or where are we at on that?
We'll do that on our other science podcast.
Oh, okay. Called Science Optional. Republicans are huge on it.
We're not very good at science if it's optional.
The Republican Party. Science Optional.
Oh, man.
Oh, this is getting political. Okay, let's
Sunday
move on to our review.
Sunday podcasts are weird, guys.
Yeah. Guys, we're recording this probably the earliest that we've ever recorded a podcast before, week-wise, on a Sunday, but the latest, time-wise, it's 9:30 on a Sunday. And, you know, it's a school night, but we don't care. So we're going to get into our new favorite film, Justice League.
What is
and,
this?
And it's how I imagine somebody who loves Justice League talking.
Well, didn't one of you have someone like in tears at the end of the...
Yeah, that was me. So spoiler alert, I'm going to go ahead and say this. I'm going to guess none of us liked this movie. And I'm going to guess a lot of people didn't like this movie. But at the end of my screening, I hear this like sniffling noise. And I look over and the girl two seats away from me is crying. She leans over to her boyfriend or significant other or whatever. And she goes, that was the best movie ever. And I literally, my mouth dropped. And I was so curious to ask like, excuse me, are you doing anything tonight?
I was going to say, can we get her on the pod?
Can you talk to us for a little bit about why? But it's like, it started, like, I started hearing sniffle. Okay, well, we'll get into that in a sec. We're going to review Justice League, the new DC Cinematic Universe film directed by Zack Snyder and about 15 to 20% directed by Joss Whedon, starring Gal Gadot, Ben Affleck, Henry Cavill, Jason Momoa, Ezra Miller, Ray Fisher, Ciarán Hinds, J.K. Simmons, Amy Adams, Jeremy Irons, and blah, 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 which is about a fueled by his restored faith in humanity, inspired by Superman's selfless act, Bruce Wayne enlists the help of newfound ally Diana Prince to face an even greater enemy. And guys, oh, did this film deliver? Oh. Let's go ahead and get into our general thoughts so that we can just talk spoilers and get frustrated.
Wait,
Jake, what are your general thoughts?
Wait, can I go first on this one?
Yeah, go right ahead.
I really want to go first. So here's the thing. I'm really mad because I'm mad at all the people who said Justice League is actually good. Justice League is not that bad. Okay, Justice League is not the gosh darn black hole of a mess that Batman v Superman was. But Justice League is not good, and it is not really that fun. I don't know. I'm like, it felt like the Joss Whedon parts were like literally tacked onto the end of every other scene. I've reached my Zack Snyder visual style exhaustion, even though they did some cool things with the Flash using that. Ezra Miller, everyone said he steals the show, and he sort of does, but it also was a little bit
much.
What's
he stealing
sometimes.
The show from?
Right, exactly, for real. This movie was like, especially after watching Wonder Woman this year, this whole movie was basically Gal Gadot saying, I'm surrounded by idiots. And that's like what the whole thing felt like. I don't even, this was not very good.
Yeah. I agree with Trevor in a lot of ways. There's definitely some welcome levity. It's not so heavy and just like bleh as Batman versus Superman was. And there's, you know, there's like genuine conversation between the characters, and there's like some moments that actually feel like really good, like a comic book brought to life. But really, it just kind of achieves at mediocrity. It just is kind of mediocre. Like it does okay in a lot of areas, and in nowhere is it terrible, in nowhere is it amazing. It's just kind of like, well, that was a movie, which is better than what I could say about Batman versus Superman.
I was trying to think of some sort of quip to make this, but I'll just say it outright. That did anybody else feel like this was, hey, what did the Avengers do? Okay, let's do that scene for scene.
This was the Avengers and the Avengers Age of Ultron, like, thrown into a blender. Like, yes. We basically went to Sokovia for the last act of the film.
Yes, this is straight up the Avengers and then the last part three of Age of Ultron. And that's not a good thing. It's not a good thing. I am somebody who generally tries to be very optimistic about movies, and I was really excited about this movie going into it because these characters are so amazing. I mean, just look at what they were able to do with Wonder Woman. And contrary to, I think, what most people feel, I actually really like Man of Steel. I think Man of Steel is actually a really well done movie, and I think it's one of Zack Snyder's better movies. I can't say that I'm a huge fan of Ben Affleck's Batman, and you know, I am on board fully with, it came out this week that Ben Affleck is looking for a graceful way out of the series, which is a great thing that your studio wants getting out the week of your biggest movie coming out. But that Matt Reeves, who's directed all of the what are they called? Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, War of the Planet of the Apes. Who's directed those movies? It came out that he, who's directing the
Lunar
Batman
Cycle,
movie,
the Lunar Cycle, the Lunar of the Cycle. Apes movies.
I think it's called the Noun of the Planet of the Apes trilogy.
There you go.
Noun of the Planet of the Apes. Who's the director of those? It came out that he has a backup, who is Jake Gyllenhaal. Now, I don't know if I'm fully on board with Jake Gyllenhaal.
I'm intrigued.
Let me say this. I'm way more interested than Ben Affleck. I am over Ben Affleck as Batman. He had my interest, and now he doesn't.
Did you not like him in this?
No. Gosh, he was so stale and boring.
Yeah, he felt like he was mailing it in.
Yeah. I mean, it was just rough. Well, like, you're playing Batman. How can you not be passionate about that?
I agree that it didn't seem like he was bringing it, like the emotion and the passion and like that Christian Bale did. But I mean, I do think that Christian Bale might be a little insane. So
yeah,
take that with a grain of salt. But
so maybe Jake Gyllenhaal is the right person.
Yeah, maybe. I do kind of like what he did here with the character, because it just, like, you could tell that he was old and tired. Like, I think that was kind of part of the character. Like, he's the only one without any superpowers, and they kind of went on that in this film. I wish they went deeper into it. And that's like my biggest complaint about the entire film is, you know, it's so quick, which is nice, because I was never really like bored. I was never like, oh my God, I've been sitting here for 2 hours like I was with Batman versus Superman. But yeah, it's just like, just a little throwaway. And then there's that one, like, actually good human scene between him and Gal Gadot.
It's
not a spoiler, but basically it's like him revealing his human side, like how tired and old he is and beaten up. And I think he's bringing that to the character, at least trying to, but it also definitely feels like he's like, I am sick of being in a green screen room for 100 days.
Well, and the problem with that is that if we had had even just one movie of Ben Affleck playing a younger Batman who's in charge of his realm, that would carry infinitely more weight. and the whole overall decision of, like, the idea of, I mean, I know Man of Steel is part of the universe, but basically starting a story arc with Batman v Superman is so insane, because that's like, that should be a culmination kind of thing, not a beginning kind of thing. And yeah. And I think that even to, I mean, not to jump off that completely into huger things, but it doesn't have the weight. His performance, even exactly as it was, would have way more weight if we had known the character before he was old and losing his confidence and kind of absolutely changing everything.
Which can be said about any character in this movie, with the acceptance acceptance of Wonder Woman, who doesn't really have much to do. She doesn't have an arc in this. Like, they bring up Steve Trevor every once in a while, which very much felt like those are scenes that they reshot of, like, wow, people really liked Chris Pine. Okay, let's mention Steve Trevor as many times as possible. And ultimately,
they
it's
did
like,
also, okay. She did also give them the opportunity for a lot of, like, low tilt up with her butt on the side of the frame shot, where it was like her butt and then Batman. There was a lot of those.
Zack Snyder.
Yeah, that's the Zack Snyder. Zack Snyder.
Yeah, no, like, Gal Gadot's amazing. Like, she is Wonder Woman. She is perfect in that role. She's perfect on screen. Like, she is Wonder Woman. But yes, I mean, we just don't get enough of anybody at all.
And that's ultimately, like, I don't think that DC understands what made Avengers good. Like, Avengers wasn't great because the story, like, if you go back and watch the Avengers, the story's not the most original or unique thing. What makes that movie great is that we've had movies before this hyping up every single one of these characters, giving us inside information into these characters to then give us this story of all of them together. And they don't take any time of them wasting going, like, okay, here's who these people are. Like, we don't have to understand who Thor is or who Captain America is. We know them and we're already invested in them. Towards this movie has to kind of clue us in. Like, the first third of the movie is just like rounding up the team in a very uninteresting talking kind of way. Like, okay, let's have talking scenes with Cyborg and his dad. Let's have talking scenes with Bruce Wayne and Flash. Like, there's nothing magical about it as it should be. Like, when seeing these characters on screen should be a magical thing that we, as all of us who love comic book movies, have been waiting for years. And to have it culminate like this just felt so cheap.
It follows the formula of the Avengers films, but it just doesn't have a soul.
Yeah.
Kind of what you were talking, like, the way, I mean, it has that kind of big moment of disagreement within the team, like Avengers does, but it feels so manufactured, more so than the Avengers one being so organic, because we have depth to these characters, we know who they are. It just, like I said, it doesn't have a soul. The whole thing falls flat. It has all the parts and pieces that it should have, but it just, there's nothing bringing it all together and really bringing us in.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're just like, we're literally the first 30, even 40 minutes of the film, we're just like jumping from location to location with no cohesiveness, no narrative arc. It's just like, now Batman's here and he's talking to this guy. Now this person's here and she's saving this person. Now they're over here and this is happening. And it's just like, it's exposition dump without even really being exposition dump. It's just, and then also, I don't, yeah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's, it's not good. And the thing, I'm not trying to compare, because I think that a good movie should be able to be a good movie to stand on its own. But because this is a bad movie, I kept looking to go, okay, what did the Avengers do right that made us so, like, because, I mean, I remember when that film came out, like, I was in love with that movie. That movie was one of those movies that I could have seen 3 or 4 times in theaters and been pumped every single time. And there's this, like, that iconic shot rotating around the Avengers as the Chitauri are coming down on them. Like, that, like, you watch that every single time in a Best Buy, as, because that's the Blu-ray clip that they choose to show. You watch it there, and even then, like, that scene is a representation of the entire film, and that shot stirs something within inside of you that you're like, yeah, like, that's amazing. That's cinema right there. That's not cinema. That's not like Oscar cinema, but that's like, that's big budget movie blockbuster. Like, that's what I want. Like, that feeling.
That's the height of the medium. That's like, yes, what the medium can do at its very best.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's nothing even close to that in this film.
I agree. I will say, though, like, I really enjoyed Ezra Miller as the Flash, uh-huh, and Jason Momoa as Aquaman. Cyborg, I mean, was fine. There's not much there to work with, and I don't know much about the character in general, so I don't know. But yeah, I just never felt the chemistry from the team. But like, I will give the film credit that I was able to like enjoy watching these characters, and like I felt a connection to them by the end of the movie, which is, you know, more than I expected it. I think I went into this film with like such low expectations that the fact that I came out being like, oh, that was moderately enjoyable. Yeah, it's kind of blowing my mind. So
yeah, I thought Jason Momoa I don't know that he was great, but he was much better than what I expected from him.
Yeah, he was probably my favorite part. And maybe that's just because like Jason Momoa for me is one of those actors that has such a gravitas to him. Like watching him on screen is kind of always a fun thing to do no matter what he's in. Because he always seems to be enjoying himself.
Freaking hot.
Oh my goodness.
I think I'm pretty excited for Aquaman next year. Because I think he'll be able to do a lot more on his own. He's kind of the Thor of this group. And I kind of am intrigued to bring his like kind of bro surfer sensibilities to a superhero film.
I will say the underwater scenes weren't super impressive.
All of the CG in this movie was not impressive. Yeah, underwater stuff was rough.
It's almost like they tried to play it too realistic and didn't go with any sound underwater, like in a gravity kind of way. And
there's more sound underwater. Travels better in water than it does in air.
Right, right. But did you guys kind of feel like that? That those scenes were kind of dead in that kind of way?
Yeah. I guess. Man, it was just, I think for me, I didn't really notice, and I think that's a fault on my part. I just don't notice sound as much. Unless it's like something iconic like Star Wars. Or you know, there's
sometimes
that Wonder
it's the
Woman
best
riff
movie
that's
score
kind
of all time.
Well yeah, but I mean like okay, so that's
sound
obviously,
is like,
but
sound is like editing. You only notice it if it's bad.
Right.
Right. I think for me, what just felt so off was what Jake said of the CG. Like the CG in a lot of parts in this movie was rough. Steppenwolf.
You mean the entire bad
rough.
Guy? The whole villain?
Yeah.
Okay, wait. Who, do you think that was like a Zack Snyder decision? Who made the decision for this person who's basically just a human with a decent amount of face makeup into complete CGI? Why on earth did we do that? I mean,
well, when you consider that the actor playing him is like 75.
Yeah, do
hey,
better.
I have a solution. Yeah, get a younger actor. Get the Rock.
I mean, right? Like,
boom.
I mean,
well, the Rock's already in the universe as Black
whatever.
Adam.
Whatever.
Put a bunch of makeup on him and nobody knows.
Yeah, that movie hasn't happened yet. Stanley Tucci plays two different people in the Transformers universe. Why can't the Rock
That's true.
Do it?
That's true. The character looked bad, but it was also just a bad character.
That's what I was like, going to say. Let's jump in.
Who is he? What are his motives? Oh, they're a bunch of just a cliche motives of like, oh, he just wants to destroy the world just to destroy it. Like, he never felt menacing. I never felt a sense of urgency when he was about to make something bad happen. I was just kind of like, who is this guy? What is going on? Oh, he has a hammer. Cool.
Right.
That, and yeah.
I guess
there are absolutely no stakes whatsoever in this film. Like this is such a response to the Man of Steel, everybody freaking out over the death toll, that now they're like, we're going to place every single action scene in the most remote location, and we are going to let our audiences know that every single person is okay, just so that no, like, this is such a, like, I feel like this is that like petty person who's like, oh, you're going to get mad at us for this? Okay, then we're going to make sure that you notice this in every single movie.
Which is weird, because that very idea is what made Civil War so interesting, which might be the best Marvel film of all of them in some ways. and this kind of idea of like the real world consequences of these superheroes that Man of Steel dealt with, and even Batman v Superman dealt with that. And this movie,
and that's one of the best parts of Batman v Superman.
Right. And this
is
movie,
that like psychological.
Do we see 100 people total besides our heroes and villains? I mean, we don't see anyone at all in this movie.
Well, there. I mean, you got to think that like Ben Affleck counts as like 3 because of how jacked he is. Mo is probably 2.
We never 3. Get to see our heroes being heroes. Yeah, like, we don't get to see them being heroic. And that's, like, one of my favorite parts of the original Avengers film, and even Avengers 2, which was meh. But, like, seeing Captain America jump into a building and stop a grenade with his shield and beat up a bunch of guys and save a bunch of people and, like, working with the cops to save the... That's, like, this is Captain America being Captain America. Hell yeah, America. And... here it's just kind of like there's only 100 people that live here and they're already evacuating and it's fine, they're fine, they're Russians, so they don't matter, it's fine.
Yeah, they chose to live in this remote village because it's the only place that, you know, they can live. They're the ones that are chose to be the outliers of society.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
I want to jump back to the kind of aura around Steppenwolf. It feels, I mean, I've seen this, I've seen this around the interwebs, but he's very similar to Malekith in Dark World, Thor Dark World.
Yes.
But with like somehow less depth than Malekith, who's not a great villain either. So
Malekith is probably the worst Marvel villain.
Right, right.
I don't even know who you're talking about, and I've seen all the Marvel movies.
He's the Dark Elf in Thor Dark World. He's trying to just bring darkness to the universe.
Forgot
the greatest villain motivation of all time.
The red Infinity Stone, the Aether.
Mm. Okay. Yep.
So
kind of coming back to me.
There you go. There's a giant spaceship going through London at the end. You know. So some things here with Steppenwolf. So apparently, at some point, he was trying to take over the Earth. Thousands of years ago, all of the mythical beings banded together to defeat him, apparently by just stealing his axe and then pushing him onto a spaceship. And he said he was going to return and keeps talking about his mother, which was never really fully explained. He says he's going to return. And it's heavily implied that he returns because Superman is dead, except that Superman has only been on Earth for like a year. So why has he decided to come back when Superman is dead, when he didn't know Superman existed for the 5,000 years previous to that? Also, when he's like teleporting in and out of places on his like blue tunnel of light, like beam me up Scotty
cannon
style
tubes.
Okay, so is he going to a spaceship? Where is he going? And if so, is he getting away at the end, like even though his drone ants are eating him? Like, I don't, there's so many things here that don't make any sense.
You know, those are things that in a normal movie I would hope to be able to answer, but on this movie, I just don't even, not gonna even try.
Am I missing something on those things, or?
No, you're 100% right.
Yeah, I like just got out of the movie, so I really haven't had time to like think through all those plot holes. But yeah, now that you mention all that stuff, Trevor, like, I already really disliked the villain and kind of like the quote stakes and the plot of this film. But now I'm just like, oh my God, this was terrible.
Boom tube. That's what they're called. I was trying to remember. I thought they were called cannon tubes. They're called boom tubes.
Boom
tubes.
And
they are dimensional point to point travel portals opened by mother boxes used primarily by people on Apocalypse, which is where Darkseid and Steppenwolf are from, called boom tubes.
Those sound like the like blow up tubes that you get at sporting events that you hit together and they make loud noises.
Yeah. Boom tubes.
Boom.
So I just
tubes.
I guess I don't know enough about the background of the character Steppenwolf. I suppose I don't know much about the DC universe once it starts getting into space and different planets and everything. So maybe I am missing some stuff there, but this just doesn't seem like it makes that much sense.
But wait for a second. Guys, they had Green Lanterns, or Green Lantern singular,
in
this movie.
That was a fun little sneak peek, seeing the Green Lantern in the ancient, or at least the ring in the ancient battle there. I also think, did David Thewlis as Ares make an appearance?
I was looking for him. I don't think I saw him, but there was definitely like Zeus and Athena in there.
Okay. I mean, actually,
did you guys see him?
There was an Ares-like figure, but I couldn't tell if it was him.
Right. So was
everything
Ares
in that scene was CGI, so I don't think it matters.
So was Ares fighting, and if so, if Ares is fighting with the rest of the world against Steppenwolf, that's kind of interesting, based on what we know about him.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, he's against humanity. He's not against the world. He's against humans.
Okay. Fair enough. So yeah. I think my big, now that I'm talking about all this, my biggest takeaway from the movie is that I would love to see a Lord of the Rings style thing that was all of these mythological peoples fighting against Steppenwolf 5,000 years ago. That would be a much more interesting movie.
That'd be amazing.
So there's a couple of other things. So many people know that behind the scenes, Zack Snyder stepped away in March of this year due to personal family reasons. Which is a very respectable thing for him to do, fully understand that he needs that time with his family, and that I think if any of us were in that situation, we would do the exact same thing. So good move on your part, Zach, for doing what you need to do for your family. In lieu of that, though, they brought in Joss Whedon to help with reshoots and help finish the film. And supposedly only 15 to 20% of the movie is actually Joss Whedon, because originally we had heard that Joss Whedon pretty much reshot the entire film, but it ends up being that there's only 15 to 20% of it. Could you guys pick out those scenes that were Joss Whedon scenes?
There were a few that I was like, that's obviously a reshoot, just because it either looked a little different or it just kind of felt like a little joke kind of like shoved into a moment just for some levity. That's one thing I wrote down actually, is like, surprisingly, the overall tone of this film is pretty good and like consistent, which surprised me.
It's pretty even.
Yeah.
Yeah. The places, I agree, the places you could pick it out are kind of, it's like there was one extra shot at the end of a scene that was added on that was just one character on screen making a joke of some kind. Like there was one shot where Batman ends up at the end of a scene like on the ground making some kind of quip about being old or something, and there's a couple of shots with the Flash doing the same kind of thing. I mean, those felt very much like Joss Whedon sticking in a laugh, because they were very much in his style and kind of the way he does things. But besides that, yeah, I felt like, I mean, it was definitely Zack Snyder action, the way it was choreographed, the way it was shot, the way it looked. I think ultimately for a film that supposedly had a lot of involvement from a second director who wasn't even attached to the involved in the project whatsoever, I feel like it was pretty even.
Yeah, and that's something that I will give the film credit for, is the tone was pretty even, and they did that pretty well. What did you guys think of the return of Superman? And also, did you notice that they had taken away his mustache? We are 40, 50 minutes into the podcast.
Just making sure.
And we've spoiled a couple of other things in the podcast. So also, it shouldn't be that big of a spoiler, considering that he's one of the top billed people in the movie. He's in the trailer somewhat. Like, you kind of know that he's going to return. But spoiler, 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 Superman returns. Spoiler, 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 Superman returns. Let's go. Spoiler, spoiler, spoiler. Okay, so what did you guys think of Superman Returns? And also, like, there's this whole thing of how he was filming Mission Impossible 6, and part of his contract was that he had to keep a mustache during filming. So when they came to do reshoots, Warner Brothers had to digitally remove his mustache in all of the scenes. Did you guys notice that?
I did not, because he's not really in this movie.
I also didn't notice it because there was so much bad CGI around him that I don't think I looked at his face very much.
Listen, guys, when he showed up, I had forgotten about him. Like, I had forgotten that they had brought him back to life. I mean, this could be on me and not on the film, but I feel like it was like two different movies. Like, it was like the Justice League people woke Superman back up miraculously with weird alien science and crazy Flash power. And then And then he beats them all up because he's still Superman and runs away. And then it's two different stories from then on. And when he shows up, I was like, oh yeah, that's convenient. I totally forgot about him. They did wake him back up.
And I will say that's one of the cooler scenes, is like that bring back of Superman and him fighting everybody. I'm more interested in this movie if it's like revealed at the beginning of the movie that they're like, hey, we need to bring, like, if Steppenwolf is a first act villain and then the response to him is to bring back Superman, but then they realize in doing that, that Superman is now evil. That to me is a very interesting.
That's a movie.
That scene of coming back is probably the best scene in the movie in terms of like action. And I mean, that was awesome. That moment where Flash is running and you start to see Superman's eyes track and his head track and Flash's response. That was legit. And then that tension between him and Batman, that was great. Like that's like really the only moment of character conflict we get besides some Batman and Wonder Woman stuff that then like the next scene is like, it's fine. It's whatever. It's fine. but like, honestly, I really don't like Superman as a character in general. He's a one-dimensional character. He's unbeatable. He has zero internal conflict or problems as a character. And Henry Cavill is fine. Like, I think he's as good as he could be in this role. But just like Clark Kent and Superman are just boring, bad characters. That moment
you
where...
You don't like Man of Steel?
It's fine. Like, it's not bad, but it's like Superman is unbeatable. He can come back from the grave and literally be stronger than anybody. He can beat Steppenwolf in like two punches. And that moment where Steppenwolf is like, I'm going to show you the truth. And then Superman from behind is like, well, I'm also a fan of justice. I was like, oh my God. Like just like Steve Rogers and Captain America are kind of the same thing of that, like, moral integrity and like obnoxiousness. They can't be corrupted, but at the same time, it's like he's a very interesting character because of the position that they put him in, being like a person out of time and trying to like wrap his moral integrity and beliefs around where he is in the world and how quickly it's changing and how his friends are changing. Whereas Superman is just kind of like, well, hey, buddy, golly gee, everything's great. America, unity, justice, and truth. Punch in the face, I win. Like, I don't like Superman.
You know, now that you say it.
And he came back too soon. Like, he died half a movie ago.
Hey, at least they didn't bring him back in the first act. That's all I can say. But, Jake, now that you say that and you phrase it that way, it definitely, that, you phrasing it that way, I'm like, they're trying to make him Captain America with that like little comedy.
Absolutely.
Of the like language.
The thing with Wonder Woman referring to him by his Kryptonian name was very Saturday morning cartoony.
Yeah.
It was just like, if we remind him who he is, he'll remember who he is. Kal-El.
What did you guys think of the reveal that the big gun, we're in spoilers, by the way, we're in spoilers. The big gun that Bruce Wayne brings in is actually Lois Lane, as the way to calm him down and bring him back
me.
To himself.
I was surprised.
I saw that one coming from a mile away, honestly. And I love how she gets out of a Maybach. Like,
yeah, and it's like blatant on their
logo. Bruce Wayne, made of money. No, I saw that one coming from a mile away, and this just feels like such a waste of so many talented people's times, including Amy Adams.
Oh, the great Amy Adams.
Like, what is she doing in these movies? What is Lois Lane is pointless besides just being like some sort of emotional tie to Superman. Like, by us seeing him be in love with someone else, we kind of feel emotion for him, but not really, because Henry Cavill and Amy Adams have zero chemistry at all. Like,
guys, I hate to say this because, I mean, it wasn't great. This is a better movie if it's 30 minutes longer in the right places.
Absolutely. This is way
100%.
Too quick. Way too quick.
It's and I mean, we always talk about how most movies need to be shorter, especially bad movies, but this movie it was like you said, Cam, it was a course correction from Batman v Superman in some good ways and in some bad ways. And it just, like, we could have, like, if we could have dealt with Lois Lane a little bit more than just that one quick shot with Martha, kind of dealt with what she, Martha.
Hey, Martha was in the movie.
If we could have dealt with that a little bit more.
What if Aquaman's mom's name is Aqua Martha?
Oh,
I mean,
if that's an Aquaman, I'm going to die.
Queen Martha. Oh no.
Oh my gosh.
This, for a movie that needed to be a home run, this feels like a movie that plays it so safe. Like, you, DC, you guys needed to knock this out of the park. Why not just be like, hey, let's bring Darkseid in just right from the beginning. Like, let's just do it because we need that win. Or let's kill off a big character. Like, let's kill off.
Well, they did that.
Ben Affleck's.
But they brought him back.
Yeah. The thing is,
which was the most, like, nobody thought he was dead. Like, there is not a single person that was like, he's dead and, like, never going to return. Everybody knew.
They should have gone the, he's not actually dead. He's just long-term unconscious. In proportion to the rest of his powers, kind of thing. I think that would have been a little bit less hokey. But I don't know.
Yeah. Ugh. So coming up, DC has Aquaman in December of next year, Shazam in April of 2019, and Wonder Woman 2 in November of 2019. They also, those are just the films they have dated. I mean, and then on top of that, there's Batgirl, Batman, Black Adam. There's supposedly a Flashpoint film, Gotham City Sirens, Justice League Dark, Nightwing, Suicide Squad 2. There's a Deadshot film, a Deathstroke film, a Harley Quinn and Joker film, a Joker film, a Justice League sequel, Lobo, Man of Steel. Like, DC, get your act together and just focus on making quality. Like,
are we gonna talk about? No.
Go ahead. Are we gonna talk about the post-credits scene?
Yeah, that was the best scene in the movie. It was the best acted scene in the movie. It was the most interesting scene in the movie.
Jesse Eisenberg actually doing good things.
He's very good as Lex Luthor, I think.
Well, I hated him in Batman versus.
See, I thought he brought something.
The
pee
jar on the desk. The Jolly Rancher in the mouth.
Thought he brought something like new and bizarre and weird to the character. That was kind of why I was intrigued by it.
I think it was just kind of like Jesse Eisenberg trying to be how he was as Mark Zuckerberg. And then Zack Snyder was like, no, like the Joker. And then Jesse Eisenberg was like, but I'm playing Lex Luthor. And Zack Snyder was like, I don't care.
Okay,
that's
maybe
how
you're right.
That worked out.
Maybe you're right. Did you guys think the post-credit scene was interesting?
Yeah. I thought it was interesting because of the inclusion of Deathstroke.
Yeah, people in my audience were literally like, oh, yes, they were so pumped.
They probably thought it was Deadpool.
I will say, of the films coming up that I'm most interested, obviously, I think that Wonder Woman 2 with Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot being back is going to be great. But I think Matt Reeves' Batman, if he can get Ben Affleck out of there, has a chance to be really good. But the other film is that Gareth Evans, who directed The Raid and The Raid 2, is directing a Deathstroke film, which is one of those, I don't know if we need this, but it's Gareth Evans doing a DC film. So yes, we need that.
Specifically Deathstroke. And like with the style of The Raid, that has a lot of potential to be awesome.
I think something else we're going to see, I bet with how well received he was, the Flashpoint movie is going to get moved up. I think I don't know why they initially wanted to wait so long for it to come out, but I think it's going to get moved up.
Do we want to get into what Flashpoint is in the comics?
Wasn't that more of a problem of like director and stuff dropping out?
Yeah, they've had so many people drop out of that movie. It's insane. I mean, they've gone through three or four directors, I think.
I mean, I think Zack Snyder is the guy. His visual style is made for the Flash. Like that's they're a very good pairing.
But Flashpoint in the comics is a very complicated story. I don't know if Zack Snyder is the most story centric person to be in the director's
seat. I know
suit.
That he's not actually.
I think Flashpoint to me is very interesting because without giving too much away, Flashpoint in the comics is very much a reset on the universe. I think there are very good things that could come out of that. One of them being Ben Affleck as Batman.
Maybe they can use that and pull off like a Star Trek style dual timeline thing, like with what J.J. Abrams did with the whole time travel alternate timeline thing, so that he could use the original characters without using original stories. If they could figure that out, that might be their ticket to a successful series going forward.
Well, the funny thing is that built into Flashpoint is Wonder Woman, is Aquaman, is Reverse Flash, and is a answer to Ben Affleck as Batman. Like in Flashpoint, the Batman is actually his dad. And that in the movie series would be Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who's a pretty great actor. And he's kind of got that gruff old man thing that you would want to see out of a aged Batman. So I guess my last thing is, where does DC go from here? What do they need to do to bring people back to their movies in your guys' eyes?
More Gal Gadot butt.
I was going to say something related, and that's let Patty Jenkins be more involved.
Yes, absolutely. She seems to be the only person that has any like idea with where they need to go with the characters, at least Wonder Woman, but also just she knows how to tell a story. And I think that's the biggest thing that they've been lacking is Zack Snyder is a visionary genius, like in terms of like what is going on the screen. He's a little too much of a fan of slow motion. I will definitely say that. But I'm totally cool with keeping him on as like the VFX and like action choreographer. Cool. Yes. Whatever. But like he needs a story partner. That's why, you know, the Marvel films, there aren't incredible action sequences. Like they're fine, but the reason why those first few ones are so great is because you had someone like Joss Whedon really just kind of focusing on story and character development. And
yeah,
I just don't think that they're gonna they don't seem focused on that. That's not where the money is, that's not where the money's going. They instead just seem to be greenlighting stuff like crazy. And I mean, we're what, like 17 films in with Marvel, and there's definitely like huge superhero fatigue happening, I think, in the pop culture. And I think Marvel is aware of that, and that's why they're mixing stuff up so much, and it's working. You know, like I'm more intrigued by Marvel films, whereas DC is just kind of like, yeah, sure, whatever, let's do this, let's do that. And it's all stereotypical, it's all contrived, it's all predictable, and it's all bad. And so I think they just really need to find somebody who can really manage this universe the way that Marvel has done. And I don't want it to be like comparison of Marvel and DC and why Marvel is better, but that's just what it takes. You have to have a consistent vision and hand on the wheel when you're doing something like this, or you just have to blow it up and just act as if nothing is connected at all and just let Wonder Woman be Wonder Woman and Batman be Batman. But if you're gonna bring them together in this Justice League style thing, you have to actually think things through.
Yeah, the underrated thing that Marvel has done is that not all of their films are the same genre. Spider-Man Homecoming is a high school movie. Iron Man 3 is a spy movie. Captain America Winter Soldier is a political thriller. Captain America Civil War is basically a family movie with giant stakes. I mean, these are not all the same kind of movie. I mean, the kind of, I guess, the tent poles are always going to be Avengers, Age of Ultron, Infinity War, that kind of thing. But, I mean, they're not all different genres, but they do a lot of different things. The first Captain America is a war movie. And so they all work in these different kind of ways because it's not the exact same thing, the same formula over and over again. Kevin Feige has a kind of a singular vision and gets smart people to work on that, but he also gets people who are talented to do their own thing, like Taika Waititi. You don't hire him if you don't want your movie to be funny, you know? So I think that they have this weird Warner Brothers or whoever is running the DC thing, I guess, is I know they've kind of got an arm now doing that, but they've got this weird thing.
Jeff Johns.
Yeah. They've got this weird thing where they're like over controlling what they want to do, but it's not coming out the way that they want at all.
Yeah. What's frustrating is that if you look at the IP, there is no, like, DC has the most recognizable characters. They're just not letting those characters live up to the potential of who they are.
I don't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
But I will say, I've been thinking about this. Yes, they have the most iconic characters, but besides Batman, I think their characters aren't as interesting as Marvel characters, meaning there's not as much conflict internally and externally as the Marvel characters have, even in like the original comic books. Like, they're not that, like, the DC heroes are like the Greek gods. Like, they are like otherworldly superhuman beings, where the Marvel characters are humans with incredible abilities put in incredible situations that have to overcome them even with their humanity. Superman is not relatable. Wonder Woman is literally a goddess. And they're all just so like honor and justice and truth and I don't know.
So basically what you're saying is DC's problem was not hiring Stan Lee 50 years ago.
I guess. I don't know.
Because I think that's the difference with some of these. A lot of these characters that we talk about and love in these Marvel films are created by Stan Lee, who's like a regular guy, you know? And I think that there's a lot of that kind of regular person, blue collar, humanity sensibility built into these Marvel characters. And you're right, Jake. We've always talked about how, you know, 20 years ago, if you had said Marvel would be beating the pants off of DC, it would be shocking. But now that we think about it, the depth that you need to go to in these kind of film series and these cinematic universes, Marvel has a much bigger well to pull from because of those characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100% true.
And even like Thor, who's a god, is so perfectly foiled by his brother, who's also a god. You know, and there's always something that kind of to bring humanity into those characters.
Yeah. I think you guys have hit on the head.
DC has more relevant branding. Their logos are everywhere. I will give them that.
Yeah. All righty. Well, let's go ahead and get to our ratings for Justice League. Jake, what is your rating?
Well, in the end, I can sum up Justice League as, you know, it's perfectly watchable, but it's entirely forgettable, and it's mildly infuriating. The pacing was uneven, editing was weak, the third act was anticlimactic, and also like kind of painful to watch visually. I really enjoyed some of the funny banter, and but, you know, the more we talk about it, I just like can't shake these glaring potholes and the lack of conflict and spectacle and stakes. It was a mess. I had fun in the theater, but it's just something that as you leave, you're just going to get a little bit more frustrated by. It's a step in the right direction, as much as the first three films of this series were kind of a disaster. Man of Steel, not so much, but they still have a lot of steps to take before I think they're hitting their stride. And so I want to give this a C-D+. Like, you failed, but if you come in and talk to me and work really hard for extra credit, you might barely pass by the skin of your teeth. But I'm sending a note home to your parents, DC.
Stacy, it's very specific.
That is.
Yeah.
Trevor.
So, yeah, it is kind of fun in the theater. It's got some good things to it. The superhero movie this movie is the most similar to, and this is so mean, is the first Fantastic Four. Like, it's like it's kind of fun and it's totally forgettable.
Yeah.
So
I forgot they made those. Holy
which
crap.
Which is not what this movie wanted to be or was supposed to be at all. The characters deserve more than that. The actors, in a lot of ways, deserve more than what this movie gives them. It's just disappointing. I went in with no expectations, and my lack of expectations was met perfectly. I give this movie 1 out of 3 mother boxes.
This movie is insanely frustrating, and for as frustrating as it is, there are some fun moments. There are some. I thought Flash was great. I thought Jason Momoa was great. Cyborg, for as little as he was kind of given, was interesting. I think his world of possibilities are pretty interesting as far as what they could do with that character. But overall, like, Ben Affleck just bored me to bits, and I'm just so tired of his, like, he really just seems like he's phoning it in and has no interest in being there. And for a character that's as important and as iconic as Batman, I want somebody in there who's going to actually feel like they want to be there. And I just, like, no offense to Ben Affleck, he's a great director and has been great acting at times, but this just seems like it's not good for him. So get Ben Affleck out of there. But that being said, there are some hopeful things in this movie, but overall it's just kind of boring and safe and doesn't live up to the hype of what this movie should be living up to. And so I'm going to give it a hopeful C- in that DC can correct themselves and move into a better direction. But that's all we have for our review of Justice League. I'm going to give an update really quick on our November Rotten Tomatoes ratings that me and Trevor gave. So last week was Murder on the Orient Express and Daddy's Home 2, which I think Murder on the Orient Express. Hold on, let me pull this up really quick. There we go. Murder on the Orient Express came in at a 58. I had guessed a 75. Trevor had guessed a 78. So that's my point there. Daddy's Home 2, I guessed a 25. Trevor guessed a 21. Daddy's Home 2 was a 17%.
Heyo.
And Trevor won that point. Justice League, I optimistically said that it would be an 80%. Trevor realistically said it would be a 40%. And it ended up being a 39%.
Oh, so close.
So Trevor close. And then also this week was Wonder, which I said would be a 91. Trevor said would be a 75 and came in just between us at an 84. So the standings are this. I have 7 points. Trevor has 2 because I correctly guessed Thor Ragnarok right on the nose. And this week coming up, we have Coco and Roman J. Israel. And then next week we will give our final results as well as doing a December Rotten Tomatoes guesses with all 3 of us. So that is that. Let's go ahead and get to our content of the week. Trevor, what is your content of the week?
Mine is my favorite Zack Snyder superhero movie, Watchmen, which is not as bad as people pretend like it is. I guess, I mean, the book is great. Also, yeah, read the book first. The book Watchmen by Alan Moore, who's one of the greats of all time in the world of comics. It's one of the best comic books ever written. Worth every penny. You'll read it multiple times. Read Watchmen. Watch Watchmen. For a little bit of that young Zack Snyder style. And a overall much more enjoyable, much more interesting character kind of drama out of your comic book superheroes.
So I have 2. One is kind of related to Justice League. One isn't in the least bit. I would just highly recommend to read the graphic novel Batman The Long Halloween. A lot of people consider it one of the best Batman graphic novels. I really enjoyed it. Also, if you haven't read it yet somehow, The Dark Knight Returns, often regarded as the best graphic novel of the DC character universe. It's basically what Batman versus Superman tried to be and failed miserably. And then my My second recommend, I think this might be like the third or fourth time this has been recommended on this podcast, but I don't even care because it's so good. We just rewatched The Office for like the 30th time, and it's just amazing. Like, it's such a good show. And so if for some reason you have not watched The Office, please just do yourself a favor and watch this amazing show.
I watched the Scott's Tots episode today during my own.
Oh, the most cringy episode of all
time. One of the great episodes in the history of television, truly.
It's so bad. Like, in the best way. It's so hard to watch.
Yeah, I think The Office is going to be a permanent recommend. If somebody hasn't seen it, you know somebody that has a Netflix account and every episode's on there.
Yeah.
It's the most rewatchable show by far.
Email me and I will give you my Netflix login so you can watch The Office.
Sweet. I don't have to pay for Netflix anymore. All right. Alrighty, so my content of the week is Thanksgiving related, and it's a tradition that my wife and I have every year, and it is that we watch all 10 Thanksgiving episodes of Friends. And I don't know if you guys have ever done this before, but it's pretty fun to go through, and if you kind of know the general story of Friends, it's kind of fun to just kind of hop in. And if you ask me, the Thanksgiving episodes on Friends are actually some of the best episodes in the series as a whole. So, I mean, you get like the football episode, you get the one of with all the flashbacks of where Ross and Chandler kind of were, you get the one of Chandler being in the box. Like, there are just so many classic Friends moments in these Thanksgiving episodes that it is worth it. If you go online and just type in Friends Thanksgiving episodes, you can get the titles for every single one of them and then just kind of go through season by season and just pick out all the Thanksgiving episodes. But that's all we have for tonight. We'll be back next week, but if you have liked listening to us, go ahead, share us with a friend, tell somebody that you know that loves movies about this podcast. If you also want to support us even more, just go to iTunes, give us a rating, comment, let us know what you like about us. You can interact with us on Twitter at Popcorn Optional. If you want to get in contact with us via email or find more about who we are, we have a website at popcornoptional.com, and we're also on Facebook at Popcorn Optional. My name is Cameron Salina. You can find me at 321 Cami Time online. So, Jake, where can we find you?
JakeBrown.tv. Trevor?
Twitter and Instagram at TurboTrevor.
Like I said, that's all we have for this week, but we will be back next week. And so until next time, pop, pop.